Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. This weekend was a busy one for the world's richest man, Elon Musk. His company SpaceX successfully caught a returning booster rocket in Boca Chica, an incredible achievement of engineering. Musk on Thursday unveiled the long-awaited robo-taxi. He promised it will be available for about $30,000 in 2026. Based on, though, his past promises, I wouldn't bet on that. And last week, the New York Times reported Musk used his social media platform X, or Twitter, to conduct collude with Donald Trump's campaign for president to stifle a potentially embarrassing Trump story. If true, this sounds like a betrayal of the principles that Musk said that he championed since buying Twitter 2 years ago. Since then, the Twitter has lost a lot of its value, many of its users, and some say Musk has lost his way. He has become more politically radicalized. All this is explored in the new book, Character Limit, How Elon Musk Destroyed Twitter. And we're joined by one of the co-authors, Ryan Mack. Ryan, welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
So can you tell me anything more about this story about Twitter not trying to block some access to the story that Donald Trump wanted to block on Twitter?
Sure. So I think we'd have to rewind a little bit to when Elon Musk first took over Twitter. He bought the company in October of 2022. And one of the first things he did was unveil these so-called Twitter files, which were internal communications with the previous administration, the previous management of Twitter, and government officials, folks like the FBI, regulators, that kind of thing. And at the time, you know, there were discussions about COVID, about, you know, how to moderate certain things with regards to the company's content moderation rules. And Elon Musk, you know, said that was a threat to free speech, that there shouldn't be governments or campaign officials communicating with the company to essentially discuss what what shouldn't be on the platform. And now we have this instance with the Trump campaign contacting X, now the name of the company, to essentially take down material. And this material was allegedly hacked material from the campaign about J.D. Vance that was published on a platform called Substack by a reporter named Ken Klippenstein. And X essentially suppress the distribution of those links to that site and suppress that story on behalf of the Trump campaign.
Was there anything to those Twitter files?
You know, they are interesting. Like, if, you know, if you're a reporter and you want to understand how the government interacts with major social platforms, it's, you know, great primary source material. At the same time, they were selectively released, and they were released with a motive to essentially show or to portray this picture of government censorship on social media. And in reality, you know, it's a bit more nuanced. You know, these regulators, these officials, they're simply pointing out to the company, you know, maybe this is a violation of your rules. Maybe you should take a look at this content. We're seeing this spread. This is misinformation about X, Y, or Z. So there has been, you know, justified reasons for that kind of communications. Now, Elon Musk is trying to portray that as, you know, something that is untoward.
Well, there was this, the narrative many people think about when they hear Twitter files is they're thinking, well, Biden used his power to keep the story of Hunter Biden's laptop from being spread on social media, and Donald Trump called that election interference. But Biden at the time was not in office; he didn't actually have any power. Right. So, but does that narrative? That's what's being told, right? And does it hold water?
Essentially, yeah. I mean, yes, the Hunter Biden laptop story, which was reported by the New York Post, and at the time, Twitter stopped the spread of believing that it had come from hacked materials is a major kind of right-wing grievance point. And it's been talked about ad nauseum for the last 4 years. And you're exactly right. You know, the people that were in charge at the time, the current president when that was circulating, was Donald Trump. And so, you know, now you kind of get the essentially the reverse situation politically. And when it comes to how they'll act, the company is acting in the exact same way it did in the past.
And so it seems like hypocrisy on the part of Musk. So Musk buys 2 years ago, he buys Twitter for $44 billion after a public back and forth. And he ends up, you know, spending a lot of money, not exactly all his own. He gets investors to come in there with him to buy it. He was even overvalued at the time, but that was the price that he agreed upon. Probably pretty rash to make that promise that he would pay that much for that thing. And so what is Twitter actually valued at today?
It depends on who you ask. So $44 billion was what he and his investors paid for it, as you said. Internally, there is documentation showing that he thinks of the valuation around $19 billion. That's where they're valuing employee stock, for example. But you have investors in the company like Fidelity that have marked their shares all the way down to about a $9 billion valuation. You know, this incredible amount of wealth that has been lost in that time in 2 short years.
And something's only as valuable as what someone is willing to pay for it. So I don't know who would come up and, you know, and make another offer to Elon Musk. Can I take this off your hands? And, you know, and it doesn't seem like he would probably sell it at any price.
Yeah, it's unclear. I mean, there have been some folks that have talked about maybe taking it from him or offering something for him. Mark Cuban, for example, said that in an interview not too long ago. But if you think about what Elon Musk gets out of this, there is a lot of personal value he gets out of owning X. You know, he is now the most followed account on the platform. He has more than 200 million followers. He's using it directly to influence the election and push the candidate he wants for president. He has allowed accounts that he personally likes back on the platform. So I don't know if he personally puts a value amount on that.
But like you said, he really enjoys being Mr. X.
Yeah, for sure. When we wrote the book, we always understood that it had become his favorite toy, essentially. And, you know, billionaires, we think about them, they like buying sports teams or mega yachts or even islands. But in this case, the world's richest man wanted to buy his favorite social media toy.
And we'll see what that means for America and free speech this coming election. We're taking a break. Our phone lines are open. If you have a question for our guest, Ryan Mack, and he is a Los Angeles-based technology reporter for The New York Times. He has spent more than a decade reporting on wealth and power in Silicon Valley. He is part of a team that wrote the new book, Character Limit: How Elon Musk Destroyed Twitter. You can give us a call at 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The source continues after this one-minute break. Stay with us.
Support for TPR comes from Jingu House in the Japanese Tea Garden, featuring Asian cuisine with a San Antonio twist. Open for lunch 7 days a week. View the menu at jinguhousesatx.com.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In the next half hour, we're going to be talking about domestic violence, intimate partner abuse in Bexar County. But right now we're talking about Elon Musk and the new book, Character Limit: How Elon Musk Destroyed Twitter. We're joined by the co-author of that new book, Ryan Mack. He's a Los Angeles-based New York Times technology reporter. Elon Musk reminds me of the character Citizen Kane, Orson Welles' classic film. There's a scene in the movie where Orson Welles is Citizen Kane. He's arguing with his former guardian, Mr. Thatcher, and he's been spreading lies in his newspaper, The Inquirer, about the new Spain having galleons off the coast of New Mexico, I mean, off the New Jersey. And this is the start of the Spanish-American War. And he's like, I'm losing $1 million a year on this newspaper. I'll lose another $1 million next year and another million next year. That means I'll be out of business in 60 years. And that's the conclusion of the scene. And so it's like that with Elon Musk. I mean, he's losing $1 billion in debt service on Twitter right now. But he could stay in business for another 250 years.
That's right. Yeah, he pays about $1 billion a year in the interest alone on the debt he raised for the deal, which would be catastrophic for anyone but him. You know, we think about wealth here, and he is worth on any given day around $250 billion. You know, that dropped a little bit last week with the kind of disastrous Tesla announcement, but he's still by far the richest person in the world. And that's a big theme of our book, which is there is a huge amount of wealth inequality, so much so that one man could simply, you know, decide one day at the snap of his fingers to buy a $44 billion company.
And it's not just a $44 billion company. It was really a big part of our information ecology that we had. And now he's in charge of it. And so let's talk about what Elon gets for that. It's in the book about Elon Musk and at the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And he is the Eagles are playing. Okay. So and I believe they are a football team. And so what was happening with that?
So it's the Super Bowl from, I believe, 2 years ago. It's the Eagles versus the Chiefs. Elon Musk went to UPenn, so he has a connection to, I guess, Philadelphia. And he tweets out something to the effect of "Go Eagles" at the game. He's sitting next to Rupert Murdoch at the game in the very special celebrity box. But then he sees a tweet from Joe Biden, who is also an Eagles fan, given he's from Delaware. And that tweet does a lot better than his. And in the previous couple days, he had seen his engagement drop on his account. And this moment at the Super Bowl kind of confirmed that. He couldn't understand why his tweet was doing worse than President Biden's, even though he had many more followers. And he gets really upset. And so upset to the point where after the game, he flies back to San Francisco, calls an emergency meeting with all his engineers, and demands that they figure out what's going on with the engagement on the site. He at one point offers someone who had left the company a lot of money to come back for the night and fix the problem. And it starts a kind of multi-day fact-finding mission on what is going on with his engagement, personal engagement.
So he wants everyone to be able, they have to see his tweets. Basically, if you're on Twitter, you have to see his tweets.
And that's actually an interesting phenomenon. So even if you don't follow his account on Twitter or on X now,
right,
there's the algorithmically curated For You page, which recommends things that you might not even follow. Oftentimes his tweets will be at the very top of that page, even if you don't follow him. If you start a new account these days, he is among the first the site recommends that you follow. You know, he is experiencing everything that he wants. He wants to be essentially the main character on the platform.
I'm seeing a lot of tweets from him that are like stuff about maybe it's the Haitians eating cats and dogs in Springfield, mm-hmm. Ohio, and he'll just have a so true or scary or insane, you know, on top of absolute untrue conspiracy theories, and he'll have just to go, he'll retweet it, but with a one word. Is he actually doing that, or is that someone doing that for him?
That is very much him. He now sometimes tweets 75 times a day. He is on that platform constantly. And that phenomenon you're talking about is something he's kind of mastered as the biggest account on the platform. He doesn't have to necessarily have a thoughtful thing or engagement thing. All he has to do is, you know, write an exclamation point in reply or write concerning, for example. That's one of his favorite sayings. And that alone will bring attention to whatever he's responding to, whatever he's quoting. And that goes, you know, beyond the other misinformation and conspiracy theories that he spreads. You know, he is right now pushing this idea that Democrats are allowing illegal immigration in order to import voters to change the voter demographics of this country. You know, that is adjacent to the Great Replacement conspiracy theory that, you know, has been so abhorred over the last, you know, many centuries.
Well, let me ask you a question that many people have. Was Elon Musk ever an undocumented immigrant in the United States?
It's actually interesting. There is a debate around that. There is actually a clip from him in 2013 where he talks and jokes about his immigration status with his brother. And I think there's a lack of clarity around that. He came to the U.S. as a student, and he dropped out of a graduate program to pursue entrepreneurship. There are a lot of questions as to whether or not he was still on a student visa when he did that and what his immigration status was at the time.
So the tweets that Elon Musk has been putting out are offensive, offering to impregnate Taylor Swift was one of them. And then also joking that there haven't been any assassination attempts on Vice President Harris or President Biden. Does that get him in trouble at all with the Secret Service?
I mean, the short answer is no. He has a lot of power. He has a lot of influence. And when he says those things, he often portrays them as joking in a way, which gives him, I guess, a little leeway. But I think he's become one of those characters where whatever he says almost bounces off. You know, he's got a Teflon like quality to him where it's incredibly hard to hold him accountable. I mean, you can, you know, argue with him online for it. You can point it out and how it's wrong, but he rarely feels the kind of remorse that most people would feel.
So in your book, Character Limit, How Elon Musk Destroyed Twitter, and clearly it's not even Twitter anymore, it's X, apparently, mm-hmm. Which is his lifelong dream, is to create some sort of site called X. He's used it before. He wants it to be more than just a social media platform. He wants it to be something that you bank on and do all sorts of things. You know, his vision when he took over Twitter, it was very different. He did a lot of firing. Did he actually take an axe and start destroying servers?
He got rid of about 75% of the people at the company. We're talking about thousands of jobs. He didn't take an axe to servers. He started disconnecting some servers at one of the main data centers, believing that this was too expensive and that he could run the site with one less data center. But he's made a lot of kind of shoot from the hip kind of decisions that have not worked out for him.
Yeah, I'm wondering, is like, is this hurting his brand and therefore his ability for things like Twitter, Tesla, you know? But a lot of people don't want to buy a Tesla now because of Elon Musk, and if that will come back to get him. We'll have to see how that works out in the long run. But yeah. Ryan Mack, thank you so much. Technology reporter for the New York Times based in L.A. The book is Character Limit, How Elon Musk Destroyed Twitter. Thanks for coming on board today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we're taking a break, and we're going to do some pitching for the Texas Public Radio Fall Pledge Drive. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.